Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, center-left candidate Alberto Fernandez has been elected as Argentina's new president. Over the weekend, Fernandez secured more than 45% of the vote needed to win and beat conservative incumbent and former president Mauricio Macri. Many political analysts believe voters wanted change because of the country's weak economy and rising poverty. Well, joining us now to talk about last night's elections is Benjamin Gadan. He served as South America Director of the National Security Council in the Obama White House. He's now the Deputy Director at the Latin American Program at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. He's the Director of the Center's Argentina Project. Benjamin, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also joining us in studio is WLRN's America's correspondent, Tim Padgett. Tim, always great to have you.
Thank you, Lewis.
Tim, let me start with this. Alberto Fernandez, the new president, why is this not a surprise?
Well, because this is just a repeat of a cycle we've seen so often with Argentina. You have an economic boom that goes sour for one reason or the other, and then voters in Argentina turn, at least in the past, more almost for the past half century, they turn to the Peronists, which are today often known as the Justicialistas. It's the populist party started by General Juan Perón back in the 1940s. You'll remember him as the husband of Evita. So that's what we saw this weekend. Voters sort of reacting to the bad economic circumstances in Argentina and then turning again, once again, to the Peronists and hoping that their populist politics and economic policies will suddenly make the country prosperous again and raise them out of their economic straits.
Benjamin, before we get into Mr. Fernandez's running mate, tell me, who exactly is Alberto Fernandez?
He's a not very well-known political operative in Argentina who served as chief of staff to Néstor Kirchner, former president Cristina Fernández de Kirchner's husband and predecessor. He briefly served as chief of staff to Cristina Fernández de Kirchner as well, and they had a very prominent falling out. He's been rather under the radar the last few years until he was plucked from obscurity by the former president to be her running mate.
What was his biggest campaign promise? I mean, what was he running on? Is just basically to go back to what things used to be like?
It's unclear he had much of a specific agenda of any kind. He had a lot of criticism of the management of Argentina's economy over the past few years and a lot of sort of basic populist promises to return Argentina to prosperity, you know, increase consumer spending and employment, but not a lot of very specific policy ideas to rescue Argentina from what really is a disastrous economic situation.
So, Tim, Fernandez's running mate, former President Cristina Fernández de Kirchner, president between 2007-2015. You told me that she actually went by the nickname Queen.
Well, that was her she had a reputation as Queen Cristina. That was what she began to be called in her later years. And it was unfortunately an apt nickname. She could behave like quite a diva as a politician, as a person. I remember back in 2007 when she was running for president and I was Latin America bureau chief for Time magazine, and we invited her up to New York for an interview, and she came up. But then all of a sudden I was presented by my editors with this 2 or 3 page long list of demands that she had, everything from, you know, her hotel needs to her dietary, whatever, that, you know, what she could and couldn't eat for lunch that we were going to have with her. It was quite daunting. And, you know, I was the one, because she didn't speak very good English, you had to explain to her that we couldn't meet a lot of these demands. And she was quite indignant. But then again, she could be a very charming woman. I remember walking down the hall with her at the time, headquarters in New York, and mentioning to her that my wife and I at that time were learning how to dance tango. And there was this one step that we couldn't get right. And she actually took a couple of minutes there right in the hallway to show me how to do it correctly. But she did have that reputation as Queen Cristina, and it didn't help her at all in her presidency.
Benjamin, she's faced a lot of controversy, though, and even allegations, criminal allegations. Like what?
Yeah, I mean, the reputation, even during her administration, was that there was a great deal of corruption that was taking place. And in the last 4 years, a lot of evidence has come to light. She faces more than 10 federal corruption charges. She's on trial in at least one of those charges. And during the campaign, she had to make appearances as a witness in her own corruption cases. So it no longer is, you know, part of the political debate, but actually the criminal justice system in Argentina has in fact confirmed a lot of what was long suspected about her management of Argentina.
And we should note that one of the reasons that she ended up as this Alberto Fernandez's running mate, many analysts speculate, was to maintain her immunity from prosecution.
Benjamin, why with all this would people still vote for her?
Yeah, so I think in part they're not voting for her. Look, there's a reason she didn't run for president. She was constitutionally permitted to do so, and she made what I think was a brilliant political decision to run as the vice president. And the reason is she knew that about 30% of Argentina will support her no matter what comes to light about corruption in her presidencies, and the rest really have no interest, and she couldn't expand her base even by a single vote. For that reason, she was very scarce in the campaign trail, almost invisible, in fact spent a lot of time overseas during the presidential campaign, and brought a much more moderate figure to be maybe the figurehead or maybe, in fact, you know, the party leader.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I read is, like, who's really going to be in charge? Is it her or Fernandez?
Yeah, it's an open question. Again, she has the bigger and more vocal base. She has the experience. She's a much more prominent figure. On the other hand, you know, the recognition of her limits to her popularity led her to nominate, essentially, she's the one who announced, in fact, his presidential campaign. And so he's expanded her base a bit. I mean, her base was 30%. He was able to bring it up to, you know, 48%. And so maybe he does have a little bit of political capital himself. We'll see who has the authority when they start governing.
Tim, is this election, as the saying goes, it's the economy, stupid? Is it just about the economy? Was it all about that?
It usually is in Argentina. As I said, we in the past century or so, we've tended to go through these boom and bust cycles in Argentina. I mean, you have to remember in terms of natural resources, what a wealthy country Argentina is in terms of, you know, beef and soybeans and all kinds of other commodities. And the country tends to go through these boom and bust cycles where they have all these commodities, windfalls that help governments really spend a lot on social programs. Everything's looking great. But then all of this mismanagement and corruption sets in and everything goes south. And then suddenly they'll turn to maybe a more conservative candidate to clean up the mess that the Peronist populace left. And then that more conservative president won't be able to fix things, and things will go south again, and they'll turn again to the Peronists.
What do we know about the diaspora? What are their feelings about the election?
Well, diasporas tend to be, especially here in South Florida, tend to be more politically conservative. They're the folks that are fleeing that disaster in countries like Argentina. And so I think they were hoping here that Macri would be able to clean up Cristina's mess more effectively than he did. But I think most of them understand why people voted again for the Peronists, because Macri just wasn't able to clean up that mess.
Benjamin, you've written that Macri was destined for disaster even before he took office. Why?
You know, what he inherited from the populace who governed Argentina for 12 years before he took office. I think to fix the problems that he received would have been difficult for anyone, even the most skilled economists on earth. And it's particularly perilous in Argentina because the political culture does not really permit what's known as austerity, right? Serious budget cutting to adjust an economy that was unsustainably run by people who, you know, expanded government payrolls, expanded social programs, basically were giving away natural gas, electricity, gasoline, almost for free for more than a decade before he took office. Fixing all those things, doing it in 4 years, and being able to win an election at the same time, nearly impossible.
Yeah, what were a couple of the big things that he tried to do that just made it worse?
I mean, one of the things he tried to do was to cut all of these government subsidies. They've been in place since Argentina's last economic collapse, which was in 2001. At the time, they were designed to be these temporary emergency measures, and no one had ever dismantled them. He did, and he paid a big political price for it. Suddenly, 100,000% increases in the cost of all of your public utilities. It was necessary. Any economist, you know, in Argentina and abroad said it had to be done, but politically very, very difficult to survive.
I'm talking with Benjamin Gadan. He's the deputy director at the Latin American program at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars and the director of its Argentina project. And we're also talking with WLRN's America's correspondent, Tim Padgett. we had an election in Argentina and a new president elected, basically the voters going back to what was before 4 years ago. Benjamin, during his administration, Macri sought the assistance of the International Monetary Fund. Tell us a little bit about that, and why did he do that?
Yeah, this was a decision that was not taken easily by President Mauricio Macri. The IMF, the International Monetary Fund, is a villain in Argentina. There's a very long history of Argentina requiring emergency rescues from the IMF and then immediately regretting having done so, because the IMF, in its typical policy response, says you need to live within your means, and that is not something Argentina is very skilled at. Once again, this was the IMF's response. They came in with a huge rescue, the biggest in IMF history, $56 billion. And what they required, as usual, was some serious belt tightening in Argentina. And once again, I mean, this had very severe political consequences. Argentina, which it doesn't normally do, actually adhered to the program and was really on track until very recently to meet these budget cutting requirements, but again, at this massive political cost, and we saw the results yesterday.
And Fernandez says that he's going to pay that back. Is that realistic right now?
Yeah, we'll see. Argentina is essentially in default once again on about $100 billion. It owes not only the IMF, but lots of private creditors who got very excited about suddenly this pro-business president coming in, visiting Davos, and expressing a lot of hope and optimism that he could turn Argentina around by liberalizing the economy. He took on a lot of debt in a four-year period, and now the next president will have to pay it back somehow, and it's not clear he will be able to do so.
Tim, you mentioned this earlier. I mean, it goes back to the history of Argentina being ruled by an idea, but, you know, also by the party, by Peronistas party. Yesterday's win, basically kind of going back in that direction. But what I mean, not to go into the history, because that could take us a while, and I know Professor Tim would love to do that, but no. Help us explain, at least in the last, you know, 10, 15 years, mm-hmm. how that party has ruled and its influence, and why it basically was able to get back into power.
Well, it got back into power at the turn of this century because you saw Argentina suffer one of the worst economic collapses in the history of the Western Hemisphere. I mean, in the year 2002, Argentina was in economic freefall. The peso had lost 75% of its value against the U.S. dollar, and the nation, as Benjamin just noticed, had defaulted on almost $100 billion in debt. You don't get into a much deeper hole than Argentina was at that time. So the Peronists rode in because a lot of this mess was created by a president that was trying to create more conservative economic policy structure in Argentina. So the Peronists rode it again, and they had luck on their side because they came in to clean up the mess at the time when commodities in Argentina, like soybeans, etc., were starting to skyrocket. So they were able to take all of that windfall and improve Argentine's lives to a large degree, not just Cristina, but as Benjamin noted, her husband and predecessor, Kirchner himself. And so that's what really brought the Peronists back into power in this century, was that awful economic calamity back at the turn of the century.
Benjamin, Macri had strong support from the Trump administration. I mean, how is Fernandez's election going to impact U.S. trade relations now with Argentina?
It's going to be a really fragile relationship. I mean, look, all alliances with President Trump are sort of uncertain. And I think you can't take for granted that there'll be any continuity in policy. In this case, I think there's a lot of reasons to think that the relationship may be rocky. And that's pretty consequential, because the future of this International Monetary Fund bailout for Argentina really rests in the relationship between these two individuals, you know, Alberto Fernandez and President Donald Trump. The U.S. has a lot of pull on the IMF board and really will determine whether there's some kind of renegotiation of the terms. Why might they not get along? Look, Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner had a very hostile relationship with the United States. We'll see how much she controls of Argentine foreign policy going forward. But already the signals aren't great. You know, when he was in his victory speeches last night, Alberto Fernandez was talking about free Lula. This is the jailed former president of Brazil. That's a signal. He recognized the disputed re-election of Evo Morales in Bolivia. He's allying himself with a coalition of leftists in Latin America who are not highly regarded in the Trump White House.
You know, with wondering, too, because, I mean, we Tim talked about the strengths that Argentina has, you know, economically, its agriculture, its natural resources. You know, is the government doubling down, investing, you know, in future economic projects in these areas, or looking to expand elsewhere outside of that?
Yeah, again, unfortunately, Alberto Fernandez has not really expressed a lot of new ideas during this campaign. Maybe he has some and he'll positively surprise us when he comes into office. He's talked about, you know, more investment in this area called Vaca Muerta, this dead cow zone that has enormous amounts of unconventional oil and gas. He wants to expand exports in general, but I'm not seeing a lot of ideas in terms of how to improve Argentine's competitiveness. It's a very closed economy. Even when its currency collapses, it doesn't get the one upside you normally expect, which is an export boom. He and the Peronist movement that he represents are very pro-worker in a way that often does hurt competitiveness with uncompetitive wages and a very rigid labor code. So it's hard to see how he's going to turn the economy around. And I think the bit of history Tim was offering is really useful, because when the Peronists came into power after the last economic collapse, they had a lot of very favorable conditions internationally that they simply won't enjoy this time around, including rapidly growing China at that moment that had really pushed up the prices for all the farm commodities that Argentina exports. That's just not going to happen this time around. And so you just won't have those tailwinds to rapidly expand the economy.
So Benjamin mentioned something, Tim. I wanted to jump outside of Argentina for a moment here, because a lot of elections going on in the past couple of weeks in South America. Let's talk about Bolivia real quickly. The race between Evo Morales and Carlos Mesa. Controversial ending. So basically the big story here is that the website that was showing the results, Mesa was close enough that there could have been a runoff, but then all of a sudden the website goes down. And Morales claims victory. What's going on right now?
Well, when that happens, you can be pretty confident that some kind of electoral fraud has taken place. I've seen it so often as a correspondent in Latin America. I remember seeing it for the first time in 1988 in the Mexican election. Suddenly, it looked as though the opposition candidate could have beaten the ruling candidate there. And then all of a sudden, the computers went down. And then they go up, you know, half a day later, and voila, the ruling party candidate is suddenly in the lead again. I can guarantee you that that's what happened this time in Bolivia.
This would be a fourth term for...
many would say an unconstitutional fourth term, because he essentially got what many call his lapdogs on the Supreme Court in Bolivia to just ignore the Constitution and allow him to run for another term.
We're witnessing political upheaval across the region in Latin America. I want to hear from both of you on this. Benjamin, I'm going to start with you. I'm curious how, you know, you look at the elections in Argentina and then the issues of Venezuela, Bolivia, et cetera, you know, and basically, you know, what do you see for the future? I mean, we're entering our election cycle here next year, and really how all this plays out with U.S. relations.
We'll see. I mean, I think the Trump administration hasn't shown a great deal of interest in Latin America. President Trump has visited the region only once, and it was very briefly. It turns out he went to Argentina for the G20 summit in Buenos Aires. Other than that, I think there hasn't been a lot of policy toward the region, other than a focus on, of course, migration, Central America as it relates to migration, and the Venezuela crisis. And so the question, you know, of all this upheaval, probably it's all seen through the prism of the Venezuela crisis and whether these change of governments has occurred in Mexico relieve pressure on Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela and therefore undermine U.S. efforts to try to pressure for a political transition. That's what we're going to see in Argentina. It will be yet another source of tension between the new government of Argentina and the Trump White House.
And Tim, real quickly, I mean, as we go into the cycle, I haven't heard much from the president on Venezuela, and I don't hear a lot from the Democratic candidates about Latin America. Immigration issues, yes, but just Latin America in general and all of the stuff that's going on.
Not since Ukraine exploded into an impeachment inquiry. And I think any substantive talk in Washington about Latin America that may have been going on has been shoved to the wayside, unfortunately. Really, President Trump's interest in Venezuela wasn't so much to see regime change there as much as he wanted to please potential Venezuelan votes here in South Florida. So his interest was very cursory and superficial in terms of Venezuela. But Benjamin makes the great point that we're really seeing, the Latin American leftist populist leadership sort of, you know, regain strength right now. What's not just what happened in Argentina, but, you know, Bolivia, Evo, as you point out, able to probably get another term. Nothing seems to be happening with Nicaragua in terms of dislodging Daniel Ortega there. there. The Venezuelans seem to have survived Trump's attempts to dislodge Nicolas Maduro there. It's looking really good for left-wing populists right now in Latin America.
And there were, just to mention, there were a lot of, there was an election, there were elections in Colombia as well, but those were, we saw mayoral and governor gubernatorial positions in those races. Again, we heard from WLRN's American correspondent Tim Padgett, also Benjamin Gadan, deputy director at the Latin American program at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. He's the director of the Argentina Project. Benjamin, thank you so much. Tim, I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, still to come, there's an idea to bring Tri-Rail to Wynwood. Would you ride it? That's coming up next on Sundial.